With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Real Love Podcast. I'm Ian Parkinson, and on this edition, we're going to be asking whether professional cycling needs a bit of a kick up the arse. Is it too dull? Is it in need of some new formats and a bit of a shake up? We've seen a few attempts at livening up the format of racing, both on the road and on the track, over the past couple of years, and there are signs that some of them are starting to stick. Ruler editor Ian Cleverly was in Holland a while ago to see the first of the Hammer series, which is one option for making the format of road racing more accessible. More established and very different are the fixed gear criteriums, racing road circuits on track bikes, which are growing in popularity all the time and seem to be bringing a new audience and new racers into the sport. Well, probably the best known of these is the Red Hook Criterium series, which has expanded from its original home in Brooklyn to include races in Milan, Barcelona and London. The third London Red Hook took place recently, and we'll be talking to a couple of the riders from that event in a little while. First though, here's a flavour of the event and the crowds.
10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, go!
I'm a keen road cyclist myself. I've been to track events, I've been to road events. Just got a different vibe to most other bike events that I've been to. So come down, have a few beers. It's good fun, very good fun.
I just love the atmosphere, the speed. You know, you just can't get over how fast someone can go on two wheels, really.
It's just fun. It's kind of intense. The speed's amazing. When I came here and I was marshalling, I was just kind of blown away by how fast the guys go and the girls as well. You know, proper kind of pedal to metal stuff. Yeah, went to Nocturne, do Velodrome, been to 6 days, which is wicked. It's just, they're all kind of doing their own thing. I think cycling is kind of getting more approachable in that way, which is lovely.
It's a great chance for everyone to have fun in London, get cyclists from all over the world to come to London and ride their, crit bikes around a course in Greenwich.
You build the atmosphere. There's a massive cycling community in each town that you go to, and you manage to meet this sort of European-wide, American-wide, worldwide fucking community of riders. There goes Brooke.
Go on, Veronica!
Everyone's always about like having fun and just enjoying themselves, and you're always a part of your teams and stuff, and you can get independent riders, and everyone just loves riding their bikes, so they just fucking like to go around in circles, so why not do it, you know?
Because cycling is great, and like there's not many of really cycling races that are available to women just like that. Just seeing my mates race is great. Building a subculture, I guess, or some sort of a culture.
There's a whole style and an aura about these guys. Not only do they not have no brakes, they have no gears either, so it's sheer muscle power, sheer strength.
My money's on Briggs. He's just like, he's from London, England, strong rider. Yeah.
Alec Briggs is racing at the front of Red Oak Grid London number 3 tonight. The man on Specialized Rocket Espresso.
And we have Alec Briggs of Specialized Rocket Espresso with us, and from the Fifth Floor team, we have Sophie Edmondson. Welcome to you both. Alec, we heard the commentator there saying that you were leading the pack round. How did it end up for you?
It sounds like I owe someone some money, and they may have lost some, maybe a few beers at least. I ended up third. It was a interesting day, eventful day. Punches, bike changes, 2 crashes, all sorts.
And it was pouring down with rain as well, wasn't it?
Yeah, that definitely added to it, for sure. As I think you when you race road criteriums in the rain, it adds, you know, a different element to it. But when you do that on a track bike, it's even more chaos. And it, for me, it made it a lot more fun.
How many of the Retook criterium have you done?
I did my first one in London in 2015. And I think since then, maybe I've completed maybe 4 or 5. I've been crashed out of 2. Started one, just didn't have the fitness, so left that one in the dumpster.
And you ended up 3rd at London this year.
This year, yeah, that's my best result. I was actually really happy with it. I'm not going to lie to you. After everything that happened that day, I was happier with that than I was over any win I've had this year. So,
Sophie, was this your first Red Hook?
Yes, yeah, my first Red Hook. Bit of a big one, really, when you're on home turf. It was exciting, though.
And the women's race in particular was absolutely chucking it down, wasn't it?
Yeah, we had there was 2 qualifying pools. And the first one went through and they got massive downpour. I was in the second one. We didn't get so badly drenched in that one, but we were still, you know, everything is pretty much gone in terms of kit and your bike soaked. And in the final, yeah, it was wet. And then at the very end, there was a massive sunbeam and it eased off.
You mentioned crashes earlier on, Alec. It does seem to be a bit of a feature of the fixed gear crits, doesn't it?
Yeah, it says a lot about it. The Red Hook crits and fixed gears in general, it's the most on the limit I've ever been on a bike throughout a whole entire race. There's so much skill involved. There's so much going on. I think the consequences are so much more severe because you don't have brakes to bail you out or a freewheel to bail you out. So, there is a lot more crashes than your standard criterium.
You got to bear in mind that because neither of us could make this race, which we would very much like to have done if we hadn't been away at other things, our only experience of Red Hook crits is seeing these massive crashes on YouTube.
I think that's most people's
experience. Which is kind of scary,
you know? Yeah. I've been in 2 of them, and they hurt. I've never crashed in a road criterium, but I've crashed twice in a fixed criterium, both in Barcelona on the same course in the same place. But I think it was just coincidence, and, you know, it was just a racing incident. And they're so competitive. They're fast. They are intense. The battle for position to stay in that top 10 is, like, you know, you race a road criterium and you can kind of rely on gears to clunk down the block and get up on the straight. But on a track bike, 1 gear, no brakes, it's harder to do that. So the fight to stay up top is so much more intense than a standard road criterium.
You're not really selling it to me. What's the appeal?
Well, along with that comes just a lot to watch. There's a lot of yelping from the bunch. People are on the limit. People are just attacking each other at every moment they can get. Anything can happen. I think from a crowd's perspective, it's not just strung out like your standard road criterium, people following the same line. It's people constantly trying to find different racing lines to get around other riders and slingshot themselves up on the straights to just gain a place or two. Sometimes I will spend 10 laps in a fixed criterium just trying to pick off a place a lap just because it is that hard. You know, I can't just click down the block and smash it up the side, or I have to really think about a game plan the whole entire race.
And in London, certainly in the men's race, the British riders were in a minority, or looked like to being in a minority. Most of the riders were from Europe. There are a lot of Americans, Canadians. It's a really international event.
And it wasn't just the nationalities. I mean, my co-pilot Andy at work looked down through the top 10 and says, I know the names of these guys. These are professional cyclists.
Yeah, well, like David Vigano, who one place ahead of me, he was on Quickstep a couple of years ago, Team Sky. He's winning Grand Tours. Ivan Ravaioli, who's raced Milan-San Remo with Pantani, and not Milan-San Remo, but, you know, he's ridden with Pantani, same team. Grand Tours as well. Pippo 14, currently a professional rider who won the race. Colin Strickland, American pros, you know, Callum Skinner, Jermaine Burton, Kian Amade all raced in Brooklyn. Jermaine didn't even, I don't know what happened to him, but, you know, there's a lot of big professional riders with big credentials not actually making the final. So that does say that it's very different to your standard road bike races.
Because at the other end of the field,
there do seem to be people who, you know, in a good way, are doing it for a laugh.
Now, what's really interesting about that is that someone might be doing it for a laugh, but they might be beating a professional rider and they might have a crack at actually winning the race. Now, that comes from, it's not just being fit to win a Red Hook Criterium. It comes with skill, composure, a race head, being able to spin as well as having strength. And I think the composure and the skill is so much more needed in a fixed criterium than it is in any other discipline of road cycling, cyclocross even. And it plays a massive part in being able to do well in the races. And I think that transfers into watching it from the sideline. And I think that's part of the reason why people are enjoying watching it so much as well, because any dog can have its day.
And Sophie, you had like Olympic medalists like Danny King in your race, which is, you know...
Yeah, well, I mean, it's not at all daunting. You're starting off, not much, someone's taking the brakes off your bike, taking the gears off your bike, and then stick you in there with the pros. It's, yeah, it's, you just sign up to this thing and you're like, oh, okay, right, let's go.
did you like it enough to come back for another one?
Ooh.
Oh.
100%. Yeah, yeah. It was so exciting. So exciting. I think we probably felt that the speeds were taken out of the women's race a bit because of the because it was so wet. But then I guess my first race with Red Hook, I'm not too bothered if that's going to happen because I'm just getting used to how the bike feels with the corners, where I'm putting down the power through the pedals, like coming out of the corners or going into it. Like you've got to really think about it.
I was interested in listening to Alec talk about the tactics because I hadn't even occurred to me.
No, I think
that idea that just to pick off one place in the string is going to take possibly a whole lap of planning and.
Yeah, I think there was an element of naivety signing up to the race, and then you hear Alec talk so eloquently about how he thinks in the race and what it takes to, I guess, to podium. And when I'm thinking back to the race and I compare it to other ones where it's also got a nice big crowd, an evening sort of that, the evening vibe where it just feels completely different to anything else. And I could tune in and hear some of the crowd, like, you know, hear my name and hear the cheering, but I was on red alert. Focus was higher than ever. You just eyes down the whole time. And that is completely different to anything else.
I've got something to add to that, actually. Never before in my life have I had a moment in a race which I can't remember. And the last half of the lap up until the last corner, I can't remember a thing of the last Red Hook. I don't know why that is, but I remember coming out of turn three and seeing the winner kick and going, I have to jump on that. And then I remember just coming into the last corner sort of 500 metres later, and I can't remember anything in between. And now, that's quite weird. I don't know if it's because I was in full-on concentration mode or because it's just absolute chaos, but never has that happened to me in a road criterium before.
Wow. My only example of that was alcohol-related.
Yeah, I was trying to remember that one, but I don't think I did have any shots on the start line this time.
It does seem to attract a different type of spectator as well, doesn't it, to kind of what you might call traditional bike racing.
Yes, definitely. I think the Red Hooks and fixed gear criteriums kind of have a connection and maybe more of a relationship with your messenger courier kind of side to stuff, which is a bit more rebellious, a bit more out there, a bit more risque. And for me, that does it the world of good. Everyone, what I really like about the Red Hook crits especially is that everyone kind of comes down to a level playing field. There's a very social element of it that is not apparent in any other road criteriums I've done this year. There's no team buses. Everyone's at the pre-party. Everyone's at the after-party. Everyone says hello, no matter who you are. People welcome anyone. It doesn't matter how good you are, how bad you are, how new you are, how experienced you are. And people are just excited to race with a different breed of cyclist. Like, there's cyclocross riders, mountain bikers, just messengers, professional riders, all in there to do the same thing. And it has the Red Hook crit and a fixed gear criterium has this amazing thing where it just brings everyone down to the same level. And I don't experience that in any other discipline. There's so much snobbery and road racism what I've done, and it's just really refreshing.
I'm just thinking from my own experience, of racing, the nearest vibe would be mountain biking or cross, where it there isn't that kind of,
yeah,
nobody looks down their nose, you know. It's like, just everyone's welcome, get stuck in and have a laugh about it afterwards, and which is a, you know, which is always a nice vibe. That's where I always feel most comfortable at home. Yeah,
I'd agree with you, but that being said, I've grown up on mountain biking and cyclocross, cross, and not once have I been to a pre-party or an after-party other than Brighton Big Dog, which is seen purely as a piece of fun. And I think cycling needs that. I think it needs everyone to let their hair down a little bit and just kind of not take themselves so seriously. I do realise that people are making money out of cycling in some disciplines, and anyone racing Red Hook Criterium or any of the other fixed races probably is not. I know I'm not. And
but some people are, aren't they? Because there are professional teams in Italy who ride fixed gear crits all the time.
Yeah, I would. There is definitely a few people. You know, I think people speculate that even people like me are on some money. I can honestly tell you, I'm not. There's always rumours flying around that so and so is on this amount of money a year from so and so team. But to be honest, it means nothing to anyone. And all those rumours seem to be dying down. And every year I think, Red Hook's going to get too big for itself, that it's going to become like any other discipline. But year on year, it actually gets better and the vibe gets better. And that's, I haven't quite worked out why that is, but I do believe it's something to do with David Trimble, the organiser and creator, having a really good sort of race head on him and being present at all these parties and listening to what riders have to say, what riders want, what people want, and just creating something that is actually fun to watch. And that's his goal. His goal is, I want to create an event that's exciting to watch, not just a race.
Do you think it'd be interesting to look at the makeup of the audience? So people who turn up on that Saturday night, they've gone pretty far out their way from central London to Greenwich Peninsula for the Red Hook that's just been. I know people who turned up who race bikes. I know people who turned up who ride, who cycle. And I also know people who don't have really any interest in bikes, but they went for the event and the spectacle of it. And I don't know whether, I mean, I remember waking up last year after Brooklyn and looked on social media and there's just this massive crash has gone viral. And it's, I can see fifth floor colours. At the bottom of this pile, there's Alex Blomley getting like chain ring rammed into his back. There's people just going, you know, when that moped stalled. And it went nuts, didn't it? It was everywhere. And I think it raised the profile of the event in a, I guess, it's a positive way for it. But part of me thinks that some people just turn up to have a look and watch the spectacle. And it can almost feel a bit like a zoo, you know? There's these people there, there's something's going to happen. Damn, this is wet this time. Okay, brilliant. No brakes, wet. Something's mental's going to happen. And so it's a little bit, I think it's a little bit dark like that. But then being part of it, there's an energy there that's also apparent. And being involved in that's pretty exciting.
It sounded like a very young crowd, if from those clips we heard earlier. Is that representative of the crowd that's there?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. The makeup of the crowd is often the racers, friends and partners and so on, and just people who are coming along who might not want to race the event but do ride and have friends that ride. Because every event has its own vibe as well. Brooklyn and London, Barcelona, there's different elements to just the surroundings which actually lend to the vibe of the race. For example, Milan is just next level. Like, you're on the start line and people are smashing those boards so loud you can't hear yourself think. They just go mental for it. There's people standing on buildings. It's, from a photographer's point of view and so on, it is absolutely magical. In all honesty, I'd say London is probably the dullest one, and it's still entertaining.
I hate to use the H word, but there is an element of hipster about it, isn't there? And that's one of the things that, certainly from the outside, that's one of the things that people find a bit off-putting.
100%. So 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, when I first did the Red Hook Criterium, I didn't really know what it was. I luckily got introduced to it by a friend I rode with quite a lot. And everyone that I mentioned to that I was doing this, people that I ride with, people at Herne Hill, people, you know, I race road racings with, they all laughed a bit, kind of looked down their nose and thought, what the hell are you doing, you hipster, blah, blah, blah. And I think in the year after, they were still kind of clinging on to that, you know, you're just going to crash, get yourself hurt. But now people look at it and they go, that's actually pretty cool. And they see riders like Vigano and, you know, Ravioli with such credentials racing it and not even winning. I think that makes them go, wow, this is actually its own discipline and it has its own respect. It's quite cool.
What do you think professional cycling can learn from Red Hook Crit? Women's cycling in particular, Sophie, I think, because, you know, one of the crowd there said that, you know, one of the things about the Red Hook Crit is that there's actually a limited amount of other racing for women regularly and internationally.
So it's a tough question. I think we're a bit spoiled in London, actually. From a crit scene in summer, you can race pretty much every night, and that's men and women. So I think if you park that, then yeah, what you're saying is right. We're a bit of an anomaly here in the capital. It's just important that whenever there is a men's event, there's a women's one matched, and it's not the second rate one. Okay, the main event or main race in terms of the schedule at Red Hook is the evening one. That's absolutely fine. There's still a women's race that's on par with it. In terms of professional racing, what they can learn from it, I guess maybe just the publicity, getting the communication out there. Red Hook are awesome at doing that. And actually, so that's across the whole event, making it more accessible. If they can get the crowds turning up and get them excited like they are with Red Hook, where you don't have all the proper like roadie cyclists or people who are really into it, then that's where you want to move it.
You're listening to the Ruler podcast.
Well, maybe this is a good time to move on to
The Hammer.
Where I went, The Hammer.
You were in Limburg.
Limburg, yeah.
The Dutch Alps, as they are known.
There was a hill.
To see the first of The Hammer series. And do we know, are there going to be any more?
Oh, yes.
There are there?
Yes.
Because at the time,
They were trying to get another one in this season, but they decided against it. But it's definitely ramping up next season. And so they're definitely going to Limburg again. Another interesting one is that they are joining on with the Tour of the Fjords in Norway. So there'll be the 3-day... Tour of the Fjords, and then I think maybe a day in between, and then there'll be your 3-day Hammer series. But what got me thinking about that was when you're talking about new audiences and new crowds, the crowd at the Hammer series I thought was really poor, really poorly attended. It was empty, and I mean you can see that in Marshall's photographs in the issue. And it is that matter of an older generation of cycling fans who just kind of, I'm a bit bored with this, you know. So even though it was something new, it in some respects it wasn't.
And I guess Limburg is sort of the heart of old Dutch cycling in a lot of ways, isn't it? So actually, you know, it's in some ways it's an old, you know, Barcelona, Brooklyn, the East End of London makes sense to launch new events. Limburg perhaps doesn't.
That's where I kind of ended up at the end of the piece, talking to the organisers and saying, well, look, you know, what people were coming onto social media, having watched it, saying, this racing is fantastic. I love it. It's bonkers. I don't understand what's happening, but it's great racing. Wouldn't it be lovely to have it in Barcelona? That was one that got cited. Yes, of course it would. That's a big ask, and that's I think ultimately they would love to have it in one of these iconic locations.
Remind us how it worked, because it has to be said, I got a bit confused by it.
So did I. I mean, nobody knew how it worked. That's the hilarious thing. So you've got an opening stage, which is essentially, well, it's a points race with points at the top of the hill every race. But then it's on a team format. And then the next day you've got a team time. Oh, no, sorry, that was the final day, wasn't it? See, even I don't know how it worked.
And you were there?
Yeah, I was there. The second day was essentially a road race type thing, but with sprints every lap. They called it the sprint. And then the third day was the most bonkers, fantastic thing ever, whether by design or default. It was a team time trial where the leading team starts off first And then every other team starts according to their time gaps accrued over a mind-bogglingly fantastical point system, which literally nobody, including the people who are actually running it, seem to understand. But that's fine. And then at one point you had four teams came together. So you've got a 20 up. I think it ends up as six teams in the end. A 20, 25 up team time trial formation
bunch.
It was just bonkers, absolute bonkers. But the winning move right at the end, I mean, you couldn't have scripted it any better. It was Team Sunweb against Team Sky, just going hammer and tongs for the line. And who whichever rider was last across the line basically meant that their team finished second. But, you know, you asked me to explain the rules, I believe, several minutes ago. I don't know, and actually I don't care. It was good fun.
Robert Miller called it, in this issue of Rouleur, a glorified kermesse that no one knows what it's for. You can see where he's coming from.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, what was he said at the end? You know, look forward to Hammer Series Milton Keynes. Grouchy old git.
That complicated sort of team time trial format sounded a little bit like what they did sort of at the last minute. For La Course, the women's event around linked to the Tour de France. I wasn't quite sure I understood that one either.
No, again, I'm not sure anybody understood. Unfortunately, that didn't work out as well. It was an experiment, fair play. They need to go back to the drawing board and look at it again. And you know, everyone wants to ASO to up their game and actually put in a proper race for the women, whether it's three stages or whatever, but they deserved better than what they got. But it didn't work at the end.
But people are clearly getting the message that you need to do something different in order to keep pro cycling, in order to keep, you know, cycling going and get it to new audiences.
I guess they do and they don't, in so much as, of course, there's always going to be a place for Paris-Roubaix and the Tour de France and the Vuelta and the Giro and but there's also a lot of races that have died and have gone out of business because they haven't found a new audience. So any new idea, I think, is to be welcomed and throw it in the mix and see how it goes.
Now, I didn't actually see the entirety of the Hammer Series, but what I did see was a small clip of the team time trial finish. And when I saw that, I was sad that I hadn't watched it because it looked brilliant. There was bodies everywhere, masses of team kind of competing against each other, riders chucking their hands in the air and they weren't sure if they won or not. It really was great.
Did you see the bit where the motorcycle commissaire was trying to get in between the teams from the back of his motorbike and he's like waving his arm, going like trying to get them to drop back? And it's like, no way! It's like gonna happen. There's 20 guys all mixed up, and he's like trying to separate them. In the end, he just got to put his hands in the air and just gave up. You know? It was hilarious. I love it.
Now, I like that. Now, I think personally, I think cycling has an absolutely lovely tradition of it, but I also believe that's its downfall. The way the cycling industry works, how people make money, it doesn't really make sense, and it requires people who absolutely adore the sport to run it. Now, as lovely as that is and as thankful as I am, and I'm sure many others are, it does hold it back in some ways. Even things like local crits and grassroots racing, you know, modern trends that come in are just snubbed. They're chucked out. Even simple things like sitting on a top tube, you know, for example, there's so many rules. British cycling are coming in, making things harder and harder to run a race. And I think things like the Hammer Series and things like Red Hook Crit that have just gone, nah, stuff you UCI, stuff you British Cycling. I'm going to run my race the way I want it and it's going to be exciting. Professional cycling and the way cycling's trying to make money could really learn something from those guys. And, you know, we are so lucky to have things like Paris-Roubaix. You know, that's a world on its own, that's a class on its own. And I absolutely love that race. I think it's brilliant to watch from start to finish. Now, I think if someone sat down and looked at what makes a Red Hook Crit great, what makes the Hammer Series great once we know a bit more, Paris-Roubaix, and so on, you know, people could maybe work something out and bring something new to the table.
But is it a case that the format of the Hammer Series is good, but it's just the recipe mixing that with like the location and the marketing? So that like if you change one thing, you're nearly there, but you're never going to reach the end that you need. But if you just get those other two in line as well, then maybe you're onto something.
Yeah, to my mind, the Hammer series just needs a bit of a tweak. Mm. That's all. It needs a bit of a tweak. Just a bit of simplifying and, you know, a good, it makes it sound like I'm down on Limburg, you know, and I'm really not, because, you know, it was a lovely place in many respects. But where was the spectators, you know? Honestly, if that had been in the UK, it would have been absolutely rammed.
Maybe they just needed the moto commissaire to stall, and then...
All of a sudden, it's on Paddy Power. Great.
You know, you look at other sports as well, like MotoGP, the fan base they draw in, and that kind of connection, that formality of a three-day event, practice, qualifying, race. You know, it's like a festival, like a mini holiday, and it attracts people to it. And I think people have really got to start looking at that.
Well, that was the interesting thing that Velan were trying to do with the Hammer. It was how many different ways there were of enjoying, if that's the right word, the content. So, yeah, you could watch it live on TV. You could watch the GCN guys, which I found hilarious and well, just very enjoyable, sitting in a studio watching it on TV, kind of basically explaining what was going on, which was great because the poor fellas were just as mystified as the rest of us. Plus, you know, the Twitter, plus the Velon, plus the onboard camera. So there was numerous different ways of actually digesting that content, you know, and I get where they're coming from, and I think that's a great thing.
Issue 17.5 out at the moment, and we can choose favourite photographs from it. For me, I think the photographs by John Pierce, you know, one of the longest serving Tour de France photographer, is an amazing collection. The one, I could choose almost any of them really, but the one from 2000 with Armstrong and Pitani, both of them without helmets, both of them absolutely at the limit on Mont Ventoux, which is a subject that, you know, we discussed on a recent podcast. That's a great photograph for me. Alec, Sophie, anything caught your eye?
Yeah, I was flicking through it. I saw the obviously drawn in by the women cycling. Give it a bit of a shout out. It's the six portraits of women's faces, I presume, at the end of one stage of the women's tour. It's obviously been pretty gritty. They had bad weather, but it's sunny. And you can see them sort of, I'm guessing, some desolate town centre. There's a couple of barriers. Pretty much sums up women's cycling still. They've got big sponsors on them, but there's no crowd in the background. And their faces are a mixture of elation. One or two are done in. And it's just summing up that they're going through the same as everyone else, aren't they?
Alec, how about you?
I think I'm going to have to go with the photo of Theo Gegenhardt from the Hammer series. Theo is just going to be a great ambassador for cycling. You know, you look at him and he's in this photo, he's battle scarred from his fall in the Hammer series. It's just little touches like the old traditional bars that he's chosen. And I think he's very clever in how he has a nod to the traditions. And, you know, there's a quote from him here saying, "It's fashionable to knock something, but if you don't give it a chance, what is there? We'd be stuck in the 1800s or whatever." And I think a quote like that, you know, it shows he's got such a good head on him, which he clearly has done from his career choices from Axion and to Sky eventually. Maybe a bit of insider knowledge. I think he is planning on giving something back at some point. And I think he's just got a great head on him. And cycling is going to be very thankful to have him.
He's also a London boy, of course, and you know, it's quite unusual for a London boy to make it as a pro rider
these days.
That ain't easy, you know.
He's just an inspiration to me. I think I'm even a bit older than he is, and to have someone so young be so just level headed is brilliant to watch, and it's brilliant to see him doing so well.
I'm going
to
go for one of James Straffan's photographs of his very own artwork. He turns out to be not only a fabulous artist, but pretty handy with a camera as well. And it is of Jacques Anquetil. James was commissioned by the High Commission in Luxembourg to produce these street artworks for the visit of the tour. And I don't know, it's just, you know, what can you say? It's Anquetil, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's just captured him beautifully.
I should also say that the cover for the subscribers edition is that fabulous shot, I think, from Andy McGrath's book, Bird on the Wire, of Simpson in an open-top car with his World Championship jersey on. And that is just such a cool photograph, such a cool cover. It appears in the article as well, an extract from Andy McGrath's book, Bird on the Wire, which was, of course, the prize in our competition in the last podcast. And in fact, all that remains for us really is the competition. On the last podcast, the question was, Tom Simpson was the first British rider to wear the yellow jersey at the Tour de France. In what year? And the answer was 1962. Daniel Gibson from Sheffield wins a signed copy of Andy McGrath's book, Tom Simpson, Bird on the Wire. Our question this time, Team Sky won the Hammer Series in Limburg. Which team finished runner-up? We didn't give that away in the podcast. Oh, for bloody... We have to go back and listen to...
we'll just check and see who was actually listening.
Yeah, yeah, I may have to go back and listen to the podcast because I think we may have given it away.
Well, bearing in mind I said it,
yeah,
who would have been awake
well,
at that
that's
point?
That's true, actually, yeah. Yeah. Team Sky won the Hammer Series. Who finished runner-up? And if you don't know, just listen back for about 10 minutes. The prize is a stylish Ruler T-shirt of your choice. Go to the Ruler website, the editorial section, find the page for the podcast. Details should be on there. And that's it. Thanks to Alec Briggs. Thanks to Sophie Edmondson, Ian Cleverly. We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.